You're listening to What She Said, a podcast for bloggers and creatives hosted by me, Lucy Sharif, a freelance journalist living in London. Each week, I interview different women in blogging and the online world, getting their best blogging tips and advice and a little bit of gossip too. Thanks for listening. Welcome to episode 3 of the What She Said podcast. I'm so excited to be back. It's so much fun. I'm super happy. I can't even believe it's 2018 and my daughter is going to be 1 this year. It's nuts. Anyway, ramble aside. today's episode, I'm chatting to Helen Redfern of A Bookish Baker. She is a writer, a photographer, she creates beautiful videos, and she's writing a novel, which is insane. I'm so impressed. We chatted all about her process, how she stays motivated to write, how she creates such incredible videos, and we talked really about the technical side of creating those 15-second clips with music and kind of editing them in iMovie and uploading them to Instagram. And I really hope you enjoy it because I loved chatting to Helen. She's such an interesting soul. She's really, really experienced in blogging, but she's so generous with her knowledge. She's so super honest. We talk about all the stumbling blocks that people have when they had started blogging a long time ago and have various different iterations of their blog. And I think it'll be a really useful one. So enjoy the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Do you want to get started by just introducing yourself and telling us about your blogging journey for anyone that doesn't know who you are?
Okay, so I have been blogging for, and I was trying to work this out earlier, I think it might be 11 years.
Oh my goodness.
So I started in, 2006? It might have been the year before that. So I've been online for a long time in various formats.
What was the initial blog about?
The initial one was I had read a novel by an author called Kate Harrison. And as I did at that time, my son was a few years old. So I was reading a lot and I was writing as a form of, well, as a way of escaping being the parent, and I had postnatal depression as well. Mm-hmm. So I was writing, but I was writing a novel, but I was writing the same 3 chapters, you know, rewriting them constantly. Yeah. So I read this novel by Kate Harrison, and I Googled her. I don't think it was Google at the time, but I researched her online, and she had a blog, which is the first time I'd come across a blog. And on it, she was asking for other writers to join her in a word race. It's basically a race to write your first draft, because the idea is that you write your first draft as quickly as possible, and then it's all about the story gets better and better mm-hmm. as you edit it.
Is that kind of like a NaNoWriMo sort of?
I guess so, yeah, but it gives you longer than the 30 days of November. But yeah, basically you get it all out of your head onto the laptop. And yeah, that's how it all started. So I emailed Kate, and Kate said, well, it'd be great if you joined us, but it'd be good if you had a blog, and then you can share your word count for that day and everybody can check up on you. I mean, this is before the days of Twitter and Facebook.
Mm, sure.
So this is how we all communicated.
So it's like accountability.
Yes.
Kind of partners, basically.
Yes.
Having your blog.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. And, you know, sometimes you'd have a tough day, sometimes you'd have a good day, and you'd get cheered on by the other writers, or, you know, commiserated. But yeah, that went on during that year. I think that was 2006. And then I wasn't the first to finish the first draft, but I did finish my first draft. which was an incredible achievement when you consider I had been writing and rewriting three chapters constantly for the past year or whatever it was. So it really gave me that impetus to get it done. And then from that, I was aware of the blogging world. I mean, as young as it was at the time, and I got to know other people, other writers online. And then I started writing for a book website called Trashinista. I wrote about a weekly column called Helen's Heroines, where, you know, I think I wrote about Daryl from Mallory Towers.
She was like my spirit person.
People like that. I think I'm trying to think of some others, but it's all gone now. But from that, I set up my own blog, and oh my goodness, the amount of blogs I've had over the last 11 years. You know, whether I was called Redder's Ramblings, I think I was right at the beginning, and then so other things. I've had Hen Orchard when I moved here. I've had Helen Redfern in various .coms and .co's.
When did you become a bookish baker, what you are today?
Last year.
Ah, so it is very new. I thought it was. I knew it was new, but I didn't know it was quite so new, because I guess I know you from Instagram, and I know you as being a very experienced writer and all the rest of it. That's interesting. So my first question, I guess, is why so many iterations? Why didn't you just stay with the...
I think, and again, I was thinking about this earlier, I think I was constantly looking for my niche.
Right.
So I was... In the beginning, when we were just sharing word counts, I was a writer, even though I didn't call myself that because of the things that go with that. But that I had my niche. And then when it got bigger than that, and then I thought, well, what shall I write about? Oh, yeah, that's right. I used to write about cakes as well. So I thought, well, am I going to write about cakes? Am I going to write about books? Am I going to write about chickens? That's a more recent one from the past 5 years. What is it that I'm going to write about? And for a while, I wrote about food in books, and I did that on another website called Novelicious. It never felt like me. I always felt constricted.
I think that's really, really interesting, because I think there are so many of us out here in the blogosphere who find, and niche is something that I definitely want to talk to you about, because you wrote a brilliant post about it, and we talk about it a lot on the podcast, and I think I was chatting to Monica Stott just this morning, who's coming back for series two as well, and she... I was saying to her, you know, I don't know, I feel like I've become known for being a rebel against niche. And I don't feel that I am necessarily a rebel against it, because I do believe in the power of having a niche. The reason I believe in the power of having a niche, and I'd be interested to hear your opinions on this, is I don't believe in niche in the way that some people teach it, which is that you have to be a something.
Yeah.
But I think because the nature of being a creative is that you're often quite scattered.
Yeah.
And for me, I need to feel like I need to have some boundaries to my...
I agree. And I think otherwise it can get overwhelming as well, because you think, I can write about anything and anything is... Well, it's infinite, isn't it? You know, you need some kind of barriers there. So in order for you to get those words down in the first place.
Exactly,
but at the same time, you don't want to have those barriers there that are stopping you from doing from writing. I mean, as an example, I didn't know I was going to write and create the Instagram account that I've got and write about the things that I do 11 years ago when I first started blogging. If I had said at the time, oh, I'm going to be a parent blogger, or I'm going to be a book blogger, or any of these different categories, it would have stopped me from experimenting creatively. And I think for those people who want to start blogs, and for the love of writing, or for the love of photography, or anything like that, and they are getting stuck with this, you know, you've got to have a niche, then it can be that it will stop them creatively, because, you know, in 5 years' time, they could be writing about something they'd never imagined would be there. And I think that, yeah.
I completely agree with you. I think a niche can be a help and a hindrance.
It can.
I think it really is about mindset, isn't it?
It is.
And it should never stop you. It should never hold you back. But having a bit of, I don't know, a kind of self-curation tool can be quite helpful.
Yeah, it
to
can.
To stop you from getting overwhelmed.
It can.
So I wanted to talk to you a bit about Instagram.
Yes.
Because you have an awesome Instagram account, and you've written about how you've grown it massively over the past year. And you're so creative. Some of the stuff that you're doing is things that I don't see anybody else doing. You're really original, and you don't really follow any... You're so different. Why and how?
Yeah, I think that's part of my... I think bloody mindedness in that I think, and I say this to my daughter a lot, never be a sheep. I mean, she's 9 now, and you know how girls are at that age, and they always sort of follow one another. And I think I'm learning from my daughter. So I'm thinking, well, it's so easy to compare yourself with other people and to try and replicate what they're doing, but is it what you actually want to do? And I mean, crikey, you say that I'm so creative, and do you know, I never thought of myself as being a creative person at all. Yeah. I baked cakes, and I used to decorate them in that sort of, you know, I used to make a ladybird or things like that from them, and that was the only way that I thought I was creative. So,
isn't that interesting? I think that comes from school, though, because I didn't see my... I only this year, really, maybe this year, last year, started to think, oh, yeah, I am actually quite creative, because in my head, creativity meant I had to be good at art or good at photography or good at something, I don't know, something that is a bit more tangibly creative, as it were. Because at school, you're either creative or you're not creative, right? I was pretty good at maths and science. I also loved art, and I liked English. So you know, it's school, I think, that screws you over.
Yeah, I agree. I had no clear path. I mean, I went on to university and did business. I didn't do English or anything like that, and I never knew I wanted to be a writer until my 20s. So. Yes, it's, what was your original question? Something about Instagram. I've gone off on a tangent.
I was asking about, you know, the awesome, like, mini videos that you do. It was kind of a bit of a rambling question, but really I wanted to lead you into how you create so differently. Like, where do you get the inspiration from? I know, like, your chickens and your life and everything is a big inspiration to you, and you do these really beautiful mini videos, which are also on YouTube as well, aren't they?
Yes, I do a compilation on YouTube. Otherwise, with Instagram stories, they're gone in 24 hours, and I think you put so much work into that that it would be a shame. So I like to look back on them, and I've got them at the moment sort of dotted in various places on my laptop, and I'm thinking, well, if I had them all there, all my favourite bits, then they're there, and every now and again I'll look back and see how much I've changed, say, creatively, but also how the seasons vary, because a lot of it's all outside. So in terms of where I get my inspiration from, a lot of it will be seasonal. And was it yesterday or the day before, I woke up and it was it was just a normal sort of overcast day. But as the morning went on, it got really foggy. And I thought, right, I've got to go outside and take my phone with me and record the ducks out in the fog, because I don't think that I've had fog yet to do an Instagram story on. So that's how I get my inspiration. But also it's sort of, I walk round. I mean, I'm very lucky with what I've got outside and the trees and the bit of land we've got and everything like that. But I walk round, and it could be that I've noticed the first snowdrops come up, or the first leaf has dropped down, or anything like that. And it kind of sticks in my head a bit, I think. I did a YouTube video about my Instagram inspiration, and one of the examples I gave there was the chives that was at the top of these steps that I've got as I go out in the garden. And every day I went past, there was seemingly hundreds of bees buzzing around, and it was fascinating to watch. But that stuck in my head, and I thought, well, I wanted to tell that story of how I was noticing them, and the colours and the noise that was coming with it and everything like that. And I think this is the beauty of Instagram stories, in that it gives you a different way of telling a story. Mm. And I should say at this stage that the word telling the story, or the phrase telling a story, it never even occurred to me. I said saying that a lot. I mean, I've had a bit of a revelation over the past few years, but it hadn't occurred to me that telling these small stories about nature, or about the ducks or the chickens or whatever it is, are actually interesting to other people.
Yeah. Isn't it funny when we realise that we are actually quite interesting people?
Yeah. And in effect, sometimes not a lot is happening out there, but you can always... You notice very small things which are seemingly insignificant, and maybe if you were busy or rushing about your day, you may have missed them. But just a little bit of slowing down and opening your eyes, or your smell, or what you can hear, and you get a little snippet of dialogue or phrasing, or something comes in your head and you think, well, I must write that down. Or you whip out your camera phone and you record it. And I do think that Instagram stories have been incredibly beneficial for me as a writer, because it is making me focus on smaller things
and what's around
me. And it helps because I'm writing a novel as well. So it helps when I'm writing. I find it so difficult to kind of get down to the detail when I'm writing a novel, and I tend to rush through and I forget to describe where she's sitting, or what's around her at the time. Mm-hmm. So doing the Instagram stories and Instagram has helped me to set the scene, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. But that's interesting, isn't it? You wouldn't necessarily immediately think of Instagram stories as a way of as being a really good writing tool, actually. Mm. But yeah, you're right, it is, because we're such visual people, aren't we? And it's so easy to get to end up sat in your head in your words, can't see wood for the trees. But actually, like, I'm the same as you when I'm writing. I've obviously never written a novel or anything like that, but even when I'm writing travel pieces, I find it quite hard sometimes to pull myself back and be like, actually, you haven't set the scene at all.
Exactly.
When you go back to the pictures, or you go back to your videos or whatever, that can really help. So I wanted to ask you a bit about kind of practicality of filming. Yes. And how you, because you I think it was only yesterday or the day before that you said about you use an app for your Instagram stories, and it's really cheap.
Yes. Well, in the past, I have been using, well, what I do, I've got an iPhone 6S Plus. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm starting from. And I will basically just have it in my hand as I'm walking the dog or walking out the back door. And I just literally hold my phone up. I might be turning the key in the lock. I might be
closing. You don't have a tripod? Because no. You don't have much handshake at all.
Oh, that depends how much coffee I've had, to be honest. But yes, a lot of the time I do have, because I've done it on my vlogging camera as well. I've got one of those small tripod handheld thingies.
Oh, like the Gorilla tripod.
Yeah. And so I have used them in the past, but yes, a lot. Or saying that, I will prop my phone up on the floor. So if I'm opening the hatch for the ducks to come out, for example, I may prop my phone up by their exit.
Right, so you get them.
So I get them, and that's when I wouldn't be holding it, so you wouldn't get the shake. But
that's simple, isn't it? You wouldn't think that it was, because they look really professional. Well, they are really professional. They look incredible.
Well, yeah, all it is, most of the time, it's with my iPhone. I've done two with my vlogging camera, just as an experiment. Mm-hmm. And then I airdrop them to my Mac and put them into iMovie, and then I edit them like that. And it's got to a point now where for a 15-second clip, it can take me about half an hour, or even a 30-second one. That's how fast I've got it now, because I think with Instagram stories, even though you want it to look good, you have to remember that it's still all in the moment. So I don't want it to be perfect. I still want it to be just recording the moments from that morning. Every time I do it, it's always from that morning or that day or whatever. And then I'll sit with my morning coffee when the children have gone to school. I'll sit with my morning coffee, and instead of scrolling through Twitter or Facebook, which you can end up doing for a good hour or whatever, I will sit and do that. And that's my first creative thing of the day. And it set me up then for the day.
I love that. That's such a nice thing to do, because, oh my God, I get so sucked into.
Oh, I used to, and it used to get me really down. And I think it can suck all the sort of emotional energy out of you. And then you've got nothing left for creativity. Yeah. But if you start the day with something creative, then the day can only go up, I think.
No, I completely agree with you. That's a really, really, really good tip. In fact, I'm literally thinking, right, tomorrow, what am I going to do first thing to kind of set me up? Because this morning, before my first call, which was at 9, or was it at 10? I had some coffee, dealt with Squarespace, did some passive aggressive tweeting, caught up with my Facebook group, and then I wasn't necessarily in the best frame of mind for the rest of the day.
I do find I'm very susceptible, I think, because on Twitter as well, you're very susceptible to other people's moods and stuff like that. And it can affect you from a creative point of view, but from other points of view as well. So, yes, and I'm not perfect. I don't always do this. I hasten to add, but
I was going to say, I saw you on Twitter.
Yes. I've been there. Most mornings, that's what I like to do. And and then, like I say, I'll upload it, and so it goes from my phone to my laptop, and then I'll chop it up into 15-second sections, because otherwise Instagram cuts it off.
And so you chop it up yourself?
You can get apps that will do that for you, but I think they cost a few pounds.
Yeah,
so
I've seen those.
Yeah, I thought, well, I can do that myself, and it's very easy, and I'm getting quite the eye now for just going, right, that's 15 seconds. Gosh. And doing it that way.
It's practice, isn't it? It's just one of those new skills.
Exactly. I mean, the first time I did it, it took me a few hours.
Yeah.
But as I'm doing it, the more I do it, obviously, the less it takes.
Yeah.
And then I'll put some music to it, and which I do from Soundstripe. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things.
Royalty-free?
Yeah, I pay a monthly subscription. Uh-huh. It's one of the things that I pay for, besides Squarespace, for my online work.
Yeah.
And I thought, as I'm going to do so many of these many films, that it would be a good investment. Otherwise, I'd be scrabbling around.
Well, that's it, yeah. The pound per video will be low.
Yes, exactly. And then I just airdrop it back to my phone, and then it goes up to Instagram, and it can take a while to upload because of my Wi-Fi. And but when if I'm doing, say, 2 or 3 15-second sections, and the second one's taken ages to upload, I'm getting all impatient, thinking, oh, everyone's going to see the first one, but they're going to think there isn't a second bit or a third bit, and they're going to go. So
it's
yes,
the perils of Instagram stories, it is, isn't it? When something uploads in the wrong order, it drives me mad. But I'm like, oh,
you have to be careful that doesn't happen as well.
Oh god!
Otherwise, your story will be back to front.
It's so annoying, isn't it? And then you have to film more.
Yeah.
Tell everybody about. Oh. The perils of Instagram stories.
Yeah.
So, taking it back to writing.
Yes.
How, so talking about kind of creativity, I guess, and, you know, you're writing a novel as well as writing your blog and doing all of the amazing stuff that you're doing on Instagram. I mean, I know the answer to this, but do you ever get writer's block?
I get that. I don't know if it's writer's block, but I do get a lot of I don't think I can do this.
Yeah.
Feeling. I've been doing this now for 11 years, and I know I've had a second child within that 11 years as well, but and we've moved house to the country and changed our life and all that sort of stuff, but a lot of the time there has been a big fear of failure, fear of success, all these different things, you know, massive confidence issues with my writing. So yes, there are times when I don't look at my novel for ages, because I don't think I can do it. And sometimes I get distracted, by my blog or these other things instead of writing my novel. But like I say, if I hadn't done all these other things, it wouldn't have helped me with my writing. So, you know, I think this is the journey I'm supposed to have taken.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing to remember, though, because I hear a lot, oh, if only... So this is, I'll give you an example. Yeah. I've been on Instagram since 2011. A long, long, long time. Mm-hmm. I only really started taking it seriously in January.
This year. Yeah.
And sometimes I think, oh my god, and I've tripled my followers in that time because I did Sarah's course and because I took it seriously and because things just clicked. And I think, oh my god, what if I'd have started back in 2011 taking it seriously, I would have tens of thousands of followers now. But that's not, like, what's the point? That's futile. And also it doesn't make sense because Sarah hadn't started her courses then.
No.
So it would have been impossible for me to... That is my journey. My journey is my journey.
Yeah.
And I would never have got to where I am today if it hadn't have been for those initial blogs, for blogging about travel, for going travelling, for not taking certain things seriously, for ending up, working in a job that I didn't like or XYZ. And I hear so often people saying, oh, I've been blogging for 10, 11, 12, 13 years in some iteration, maybe less than that, whatever, maybe more, if I'd have taken it seriously from the start. but that's not, it's not possible for us to think like that.
No. And the thing is, I had other things going on in my life at the time as well. And I sometimes think that maybe if this had all happened a few years ago, I mean, my blog's now beginning to get a lot of traffic, and I look at the stats growing and I think, oh, this is really exciting, but also a little bit scary. And I think, well, if this had happened 5 years ago or something like that, it would have freaked me out.
Would it? Because you did actually just mention, like, one of the stumbling blocks, I guess, is the fear of success.
Of success.
Which is interesting. Talk a little bit more about that. That's really interesting to me. It's like therapy now.
It is therapy. I think this is always why when I say I've written a novel, I've written a first draft, a second draft, a third draft, however many drafts. I think I might be on draft 7 now. And there's something in me that thinks, well, you know, once it's finished, that means I have to then start sending it out and looking for representation, and publishers and everything. And that that used to scare me. That really did used to scare me. And it wasn't until when I started writing for Novelicious, and I was writing about food in fiction, and I was contacted by a literary agent and taken on as her client, and we were putting together a recipe book proposal about food in fiction. And it's only then that I got this kind of self-belief that this is something that I can do. And also, this is something I'm prepared for it if it happens. I mean, as it happened, it didn't happen, so I didn't have to cross that bridge. But I think with the blogging, with Instagram, with the Instagram stories, doing things like putting my face on Instagram stories, doing things, talking to camera, I've done various YouTube videos where I talk to camera, doing all these different things, trying new things all the time, has helped me both with my confidence and with this fear that one day it might be, you know, become really successful.
Is it like a sort of, it's essentially like you're preparing yourself just.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which yes.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Yes.
I think Instagram stories in particular, people can be quite frightened to put their face. It does get easier.
It does get easier. Now I don't really think anything about it other than thinking, have I got the camera at the right angle so I don't look, you know, with bags under my eyes and bad tensions or whatever. That's all I'm thinking about. But I don't really have a massive fear about talking to camera anymore. I set out deliberately when this recipe book proposal that I was putting together with my agent at the time, when I got rejected by the publisher, very nice rejections, I should say. One of the stumbling blocks, I think, was the fact that I didn't have a television platform, which if you did book, say, 5-10 years ago, you needed to be on TV like Nigella or Jamie.
You just need a blog, right?
Exactly. Now, the amount of people who've had recipe books from blogs or Instagram or anything like that, it is pretty huge. And so I deliberately set out to create a platform because I thought, well, I don't want to be on TV. I've got no ambitions to go that way, but I do enjoy writing, and I rather like the idea of photography. So that's what I did, and that's why it all started. That's going back to one of your questions some time back. But yeah,
it's interesting you say that actually, because a friend who is writing a recipe book. A very specialist recipe book about she's had a double lung transplant, and right. So she now has to eat a very certain way because of her immune system.
Yeah.
So incredibly, incredibly niche. And she's published, or she's got an agent and a book deal for a recipe book for this specific set of people. And her publisher or agent, I don't really know which way around it is, said, get yourself an Instagram account and a blog.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, wow. Because so she approached me and asked me for a bit of help and advice on it. And I was like, wow, okay. Because they were like, you need to have an online presence.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's the only way you can get published nowadays, but I do think it can help you. Mm. If you've got an online platform and you've already got people who are interested in what you create, it can certainly help with publishers when they're looking at, you know, your proposals or your first three chapters or anything like that. It can help them to think, well, actually, yes, this could work.
As in, like, these are proven buyers of the book, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, like I say, you know, I could name quite a few people who haven't got an online platform, but have still managed to get a publishing deal. So it's not imperative, but for me personally, yeah, exactly. But for me personally, it's also helped in develop my writing. Yeah. I mean, I'm a completely different writer to what I was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So I've worked on my writing, I've worked on my photography, and I've become a teller of stories, if you like, which I didn't think I would be.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're such a natural.
Well, do you know,
it feels like you're such a natural on the outside.
It didn't feel, I didn't think that telling non-fictional stories in a creative way was a thing, but it is a thing.
Yeah.
This is how naive I was. So yeah, it is a thing, and it's something I really, really enjoy. So, and it helps me, like I say, in all different aspects of my writing. So
what's your
favorite
thing to tell stories about? The chickens?
I like to write about the chickens, but I also like to, let's see if I can explain this. I like to compare it and contrast it with aspects of my own life, if that makes sense. So as an example, even though there's no chickens in the story, so it's not a very good example. But when on my blog, I write a few sort of snippets of stories where I'm sort of looking back in my life and stuff like that. So one of them is called Working Girl. So I'm remembering when I first started working in London and the job I had then. And if you remember the film Working Girl with Melanie Griffith, and it was her dream to have an office and to, you know, cause that meant she'd made it.
Have
the office and the secretary and have the view of New York and everything like that. And for a time that was my ambition too, but now, I couldn't think of anything worse for me personally than to be in an office every day. And it's things like that that I like to bring in the nature bits and my change in circumstances with the chickens and stuff like that. So yeah.
I love reading stuff like that. I love it. And I mean, it's super interesting. And the way you do it, so because you have so many different mediums and platforms to be creative. And like I said at the beginning, I really don't see many other people doing it in the same way that you're doing it. You're not a sheep at all.
Good. That's the idea. But I do think there are so many of us that are carving out a different way of doing things on the internet, because it is still brand new. And I think it's an exciting place to be and a scary place to be, but it's an exciting place to be as a creative, because you can try and experiment with lots of different things. If it doesn't work, then, you know, I mentioned Twitter earlier, but I'm not actually a big fan. And for someone who writes, I don't find it's necessarily the right medium for me to write on. I don't know why. I always thought
shouty.
Maybe. But even before it got a really shouty place, I thought Twitter was for writers and therefore I should be on it. But I always felt I was trying to squeeze a square peg into a round hole. And and that's why I think I love Instagram. So using the captions on Instagram for me is a lot more pleasurable, and I find it easier than trying to do the same thing on Twitter.
I'm with you on that. 100%. That's a really good lesson, everybody. Don't try and fit a round peg into a square hole. If you don't like the social media that you're using, never feel like you should be using anything. We've only got limited time in our day. Don't get sucked into feeling like you need to use it all. On that note, can you let everybody know where they can find you online, please?
Right. I am abookishbaker.com as my blog, and I'm abookishbaker on Instagram, Facebook, though I, again, love-hate relationship with that, abookishbaker on Twitter, and I'm Helen Redfern on YouTube. I think that's all of it
in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being a part of it.
Oh, thank you. It's been really, I've been such a fan of season one, this is very exciting.
Thanks for listening to What She Said. If you liked this episode or any of the other episodes, then please think about leaving me a rating and a review on iTunes, because it really helps get the show out to other awesome creators like you, and it's a little bit of an ego boost for me too. If you want to connect with me, you can find me over on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, everywhere, at Wanderlooze Blog, or just head over to my blog, wanderlooze.com, which is also where you can find the show notes for every single episode too. I love hearing what you think about the show, if it's good, and I try to reply to each and every one of you. Thanks for listening, and come back again next week.